Why is there a harbor seal walking around the office?
Oh, that's our new CEO.
Come again?
Well, apparently they didn't order through Easy Cater for the board meeting, and when the food didn't arrive, they kind of lost focus. Next thing you know?
We have a seal as our CEO. Did I say something wrong?
No, she just wants a mackerel. Here you go.
Bad ideas happen when there's no food for the meeting. So make sure it's on time and as ordered from more than 80,000 restaurants. How? Easy Cater.
Thank you. I just got promoted.
Order 24/7 on EasyCater.com.
No games on the schedule? That doesn't stop us from talking football. It's time for the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association Show. Presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Here are your hosts, past WFCA president and associate head coach at Arrowhead, Tom Swiddle, and the fans' high school insider, big time Mike McGivern.
And a good morning to you. As we welcome you in to the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Pick and Save, as well as Pella Doors and Windows. Don Wachilla is sitting in this morning for the aforementioned big-time Mike McGivern, who has stepped to the parking lot getting ready to start his 4th of July weekend, joined as always by the Hall of Fame coach, Tom Swiddle. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm great, Don. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Glad to be in here this morning, helping you guys out. Love the show. Great to be a part of it this morning. Let's run down the guests that we have here today lined up for what will be a jam-packed 2 hours at 10 a.m., which is obviously now past. So in a couple of minutes, Brian Hoffman, Director of Guidance from Wauwatosa West High School, will be joining us, and he'll be talking about the NCAA clearinghouse process. So if you have a son or daughter who is getting ready to make that next step into the college ranks, you're going to want to stick around, because sometimes maneuvering all of the paperwork and the various things that you have to tackle to get into the world of college athletics can be a little bit daunting. And Brian will help explain some of that and give you some guidance as to where to go once you reach that point. Coming up at about 10:30, Ron Ernst, head football coach at Ripon College, will be joining us. At 11 o'clock, Jerry Golombieski, the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association fundraising chairman. Jerry's going to be talking about the upcoming All-Star Game and how it benefits Children's Hospital and the relationship there. And then at 11:30, Craig Orlin from Pro3 Solutions will be joining us. Pro3 Solutions really invested into making sure we've got safe equipment, especially coming out of what we've just come out of with the pandemic. Ever so important now to make sure everything is up and raring to go. So that's what we've got in store for the show today. And with that, let's not waste any time. Let's jump right to the Midwest Bank Hotline and bring in Brian Hoffman. He's the Director of Guidance for Wauwatosa West High School. Brian, how you doing this morning?
Doing great, gentlemen. I am honored to be your leadoff hitter for your WFCA program this morning.
And the leadoff spot, ever so important, especially in the midst of this Brewer 10-game winning streak. We know how important a leadoff hitter can be. So, Brian, let's start with this. Let's just give an overview of what it is the NCAA clearinghouse process is about.
Yeah, so it can get very, very involved very quickly when you start talking about the minutiae of it. But essentially, the NCAA clearinghouse is declares something called initial eligibility for student athletes, and all that means is that, you know, it gives that student athlete permission to practice, attend meetings, and, you know, to enter the field of play. And, you know, the important thing to remember is that it's called initial eligibility, so that the student athletes still need to abide by the school's eligibility rules. So that just kind of gets them through the door, that eligibility coming out of high school.
And you know, Don, that through the years we've talked about college recruiting and eligibility and those kinds of things. And, you know, we've talked to high school coaches, college coaches, parents, and it is a huge process. And we're just so lucky to have Brian on this morning to kind of make sense of it all. And just so we're all on the same page here, it's really not called the NCAA Clearinghouse anymore, correct? It's called the NCAA Eligibility Center.
That is correct.
And but really, the things that go into that haven't changed much in recent years. So let's start by maybe just looking at the basic parts of this eligibility process. And it really comes down to the courses you take, your GPA, and then how they're combined in order to see if you're eligible or not. So perhaps, Brian, we can start by talking about the core course requirements, because there are specific things that athletes at the Division I and Division II level have to accomplish while in high school.
Right. So I guess I'll start with the basics. So, it's typically a combination of standardized test scores and your GPA and core academic classes. So, but I think it's important to note, because of COVID and the pandemic, NCAA has at least for the short term waived the testing requirement. So any current high school senior who is seeking eligibility will not need to submit an SAT or an ACT score as part of their eligibility. So it's completely based upon their cumulative grade point average through those 4 years of high school, and they have to get what's called the 16 core in. And sometimes, you'll hear people talk about 4x4. You know, the 4x4 for that 16 core is kind of might be an easier way to remember that. And that's really that they'll need 4 units of math, 4 units of science, 4 units of English, and 4 units of social studies. And I think to kind of dive in maybe a little bit deeper for coaches and you know, the people that really are kind of more in the know, is that you need to lock in 10 of those core by the end of your junior year. So and a portion of those must come from English, math, and science. So it's really kind of important. I mean, the best advice I can give to any student coming out of middle school, even starting that freshman year of high school, that is a pretty high caliber athlete, is to start this process early. Head to the NCAA eligibility website, and there's a publication that I really recommend to families and students, and for that matter to coaches or anybody involved in this process. And it's a publication you can download for free off their website. It's called The Guide for the College-Bound Student Athlete. And that really will give you just about everything you need to know and then some about the whole eligibility process. And there's some good worksheets in there that you can use to kind of calculate where you're at, from freshman year to sophomore year to junior year, to kind of track your course requirements. And the other piece of advice I really would give to all those student athletes out there is really, once again, starting early to make sure that you check the list of the courses that your high school offers that are part of that, those meet the core eligibility requirements, because it's not all classes. So even if it's an English class at your high school, or a math class, or a science class, or a social studies class, it might not necessarily count towards that core. So it's important to kind of get in front of that and check your own high school's list of courses that are eligible.
So, Brian, in terms of, you know, the core courses, and I think you just said something that's really, really important. You can't assume that every English course, for instance, is going to count towards the core courses for the NCAA. And I'm sure that you yearly update your core courses for the NCAA so they know exactly what, in your instance, Wauwatosa West is offering and what they will accept.
Yeah, I mean, I think in particular, you know, right now with the pandemic going on, that we have lots of kids who've taken advantage of maybe some virtual coursework or some online coursework, or maybe they took some classes through a summer school at a different school or a correspondence class through a different school. All of that really needs to be rectified through that NCAA eligibility process and make sure that those courses actually count. And I think sometimes, you know, your coach, your athletic director, your your high school counselor, unless they're really kind of paying attention to this process and really kind of know the ins and the outs, won't necessarily know the answers to those questions. So sometimes it falls back on the lap of the parent and the student themselves to really make sure they're doing their due diligence to check out what courses really will count towards that core.
We're talking with Brian Hoffman, the director of guidance at Wauwatosa West High School, as we're learning more and more about navigating the NCAA Eligibility Center. Brian, I want to go back to a comment you just made a few minutes ago, and it has to do with the grading. And in and around southeastern Wisconsin, within the various school districts, there is a bit of a difference as far as how grading goes. So when a student or a parent is getting ready to enter that information into the portal, does the NCAA have a way of kind of evening the playing field, so to speak? Because, for instance, I know, let's say, within MPS, the grading system is different than what you have over there in Wauwatosa. So does the NCAA handle those variables?
Yeah, great question, Don. So in essence, the way the on-weight grades, so it's a four-point scale. So any system that a high school might use where they're not using a four-point scale. So in other words, you know, in the four-point scale, an A is a four, a B is a three, a C is a two, a D is one, that the NCAA will on-weight the grades. So if a high school, you know, awards a five, let's say, for an A, they'll on-weight that and put everybody on that same scale, in essence, to make sure that the playing field is as level as possible.
And Brian, going back to core courses, you know, I've heard some horror stories through the years. Thankfully, it never happened to me. But where athletes have thought something they've taken would count, it doesn't count, and it really gets dicey after that. And the NCAA is not, I'll say, a forgiving organization when it comes to some of the rules and regulations. But have you ever heard of that? Have you ever worked with that maybe personally? And what would happen if you submit all your information and it comes back that you don't have enough English, for instance, to meet the NCAA requirements? Are there any kinds of things you can do at that point in order to, you know, get it reversed?
Yeah, I mean that's where it kind of gets a little tricky, and you know there's certain the process where you can go through the NCAA and appeal their decisions, and I think unfortunately we're going to see a bit more of this happen because of the pandemic, where kids are going to have some anomalies on their transcript, and you know the NCAA has even issued some rules about being more forgiving about pass-fail grades and transcripts. But there are some ways to kind of remediate that situation, by doing summer school, and certainly we see a lot of student athletes who get into a situation where they don't meet that core, don't meet the initial eligibility, and, you know, they might need to then start at a junior college or go that kind of route to kind of rectify some of the situations. So they, you know, once again, it's that initial eligibility that we're talking about here. So it's not a dead end if you don't meet that initial eligibility. There are some ways to still get there. There's a bunch of ways actually to still get there. But I think, you know, Tom, as you kind of, luckily I've too have been able to avoid those situations, but I haven't been involved in situations with some of our students who try to argue cases for certain anomalies in their transcripts or test score anomalies. And, you know, once again, try to work closely with somebody within your athletic department or in the counseling office to make sure that doesn't happen as you kind of go through high school. I guess I would also say that the good news is if you're a good student, college-bound student, you're getting good, decent grades, and you're taking the typical course college-bound coursework in high school, rarely are you going to have an issue with meeting eligibility requirements.
Brian, we've been talking about the pitfalls that a student-athlete could go through as far as their grades go, but there are some other pitfalls regarding amateurism and eligibility. What are some of the common pitfalls an athlete might stumble upon other than necessarily the grades and the transcripts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think something that Tom frequently talks about is, you know, just because you meet that initial eligibility, you know, you have those grades and you have the requisite standardized test scores, you still need to meet the requirements of the university to participate in sports. So, you know, they all have their own rules for athletes participating. So that includes, you know, disciplinary issues, maintaining a certain decorum, you know, bank school rules. So all those things obviously come into place for you to be able to participate in athletics at the college level. So, you know, once again, to me, the best advice I can give to any college-bound student athlete is, you know, do what you're supposed to do. You know, be a good school citizen, do well in your classes, earn decent grades, get involved in not only athletics, but, you know, service to the community and other co-curricular activities. And typically, you know, you're going to be okay.
Don, are we getting into a break here?
Go ahead. Go one more, Tom, and then, yeah, we'll wrap things up with this particular segment.
Okay. You know, Brian, one of the things that you know, unbeknownst to you as a counselor, let's say, you may not know that there's a student you're working with that intends to play Division I or Division II athletics. So, and you've said it already, and I think it's important to emphasize that, you know, as a student athlete, as a family of a student athlete, it's sort of on you to make sure that you are doing what you need to do. Now, certainly there are people in your high school that are there to help you, but I can tell you, I know a lot of coaches that don't know the ins and outs of this process, and certainly a lot of athletic directors do not. Even your typical guidance counselor may have never worked with somebody who is a scholarship-level type athlete that needs this kind of help. So I think, again, Brian, it's worth noting, and you've already said it, that it is on you as that athlete, on you as that family, to make sure to know what you need to know in order to be eligible. So that, I think, is an important message today.
I mean, I'm kind of a wonky nerd about this kind of stuff, so I kind of keep up on it. And I'm kind of the NCAA eligibility guy from our school, but I would even say the typical person in the typical high school, the counselor responsible for updating that list with NCAA isn't always completely on top of it. And even I, when I'm working with kids and I'm advising them, I never make an assumption that they're a student athlete or they're planning on going on and playing at the Division I or Division II level and trying to earn scholarship money. So my advising tends to be kind of athlete neutral in a way. And then, you know, once again, I advise them to take strong college-bound courses and do the best they can. So all that's solid advice, but really, yeah, as complex and confusing as it is, it's definitely, you know, on the parents and the athlete themselves. And if that support isn't there for that student athlete, you know, I think that's where the trusted adult in the building and somebody to find this information out for them and to reach out and really help that student, to help them, guide them through this process, is really important. So hopefully in most high schools, I think you're going to find at least one person who has a pretty good grasp on it or can figure it out for a student.
Brian, I want to sneak one more quick question here before we get to a break. Got about 30 seconds. Looking at the NCAA eligibility portal, one of the statements that they make is that it's more important with your coursework than maybe your ACT or your SAT scores. And with the pandemic, we've seen, as you mentioned earlier, the testing being put on the shelf. And testing has always been one that has gone through a lot of discussion, a lot of debate. So real quick, in your mind, looking forward, using that crystal ball, do you think the testing aspect is something that will be shelved permanently, or is it something that will be brought back but maybe weighted even differently once we get out and back into normal?
Boy, you know, it's another good question. So I think, you know, we're seeing for sure that there's a number of universities in one of the systems, even the University of California University System, has permanently shelved the admission requirements for an SAT or an ACT score. So I think the trend has been there for a while to kind of eliminate the testing piece for the admission process, or to weight it differently, or to make it, a lot of schools have gone what's called test optional. So, and I entirely suspect that we might see something like they have with NCAA as well. I mean, there's questions of equity and how fair the whole testing process is. I know the governing board, NCAA governing board, is going to be meeting again soon to talk about that very issue, about going forward with whether or not test scores will continue to be part of the eligibility process. So I would not be surprised at all if we see a pretty big change in how the NCAA handles the whole testing piece.
Brian, appreciate your time. Have a great 4th of July. Be safe.
And John, we got him on the next segment, too.
We've got him on the next segment. Well, yeah. We're going to carry this over. See, the host needs to read the notes is really what it boils down to.
Yeah,
Tom.
We have Brian on for half an hour.
The host needs to read the notes. All right, let's
get to talk about the possibility of George Webb hamburgers.
Yes, we'll do that. How about we do that on the other side of the break? Brian will join us on the other side of the break. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Pella Doors and Windows, right here on 1250 AM, The Fan. Once again, welcome back in on this 4th of July weekend to the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Pella Doors and Windows. I'm Don Wachilis, sitting in for big-time Mike McGivern on this Saturday. Tom Swiddle also joining us, and once again, back on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, Brian Hoffman, the Director of Guidance at Wauwatosa West High School, as we've been going through as we negotiate the NCAA Eligibility Center. And Brian, when a student accesses it, do they then have multiple opportunities to update and keep the information as present as possible to make sure they don't experience some of the pitfalls we were talking about in that last segment?
Yeah, so one of the kind of the nice new changes with the eligibility website is that, you know, when you first kind of go to the website, you're going to be asked to create accounts, and there's a new. It used to be that you had to create a certification account, and that actually costs money. And there's a new account now called it's just a profile account, and that is completely free. And actually, if you're going Division II or not sure, you can keep that profile account. At some point, if you're switching over to D1, you're going to have to create that certification account. But that profile account gives you that opportunity to kind of track all your information from starting from freshman year on. With that profile account, you can keep track of your courses, and you know, you can access your high school's list of classes that meet eligibility requirements. So that's kind of a nice change too that's happened on that eligibility website.
Brian, there's just a couple more things that I'd like to cover with you this morning. One of them is sort of a warning to parents and to student athletes. If you just Google NCAA Clearinghouse, for instance, you may not go directly to the NCAA website. You may get some organization that will help you do this for money, correct?
Yeah, actually this morning I was kind of doing exactly that, and I was actually trying to put in the website the NCAA gives you to go straight there, and somehow I still ended up on the wrong website. So even somebody like me who has some expertise, you have to be really careful to make sure you're on that NCAA website, and hopefully it's pretty clear when you are on the right site. But yeah, there's lots of organizations out there that are trying to make a buck off of student athletes, and I think there's some better than others, but be careful.
And to be clear, this doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to pay anybody to navigate this NCAA eligibility center. You're completely capable of doing it on your own. There's no need to pay somebody to do that for you. So please be careful about that out there. Now, Brian, we've talked about how GPA factors into this, and I think it's important to note that, you know, the way the NCAA looks at your GPA isn't necessarily the GPA that's on your transcript. Do you want to cover that quickly?
Sure. Yeah. So once again, you know, the GPA is based on those core courses. So it's not your grade point average could be lower than, and you still might qualify. So right now, to qualify for initial eligibility for a Division I athlete, it's a 2.3 cumulative grade point average. So, you know, that's a C-plus average. So your transcript might say you have a 1.9, or it might say you have a 3.0. And, you know, once again, if you have a system, an athletic system, a grading system at your school that's weighted, and after class those core academic courses are unweighted, and the other issue is that you have to complete a certain number of those core classes and lock them in at the end of your junior year. So once those grades are locked in, those cores are locked in, those 10 core are locked in, those you can't change them. So you can't replace those grades with classes you take at the beginning, once the seventh semester of your school starts. So yeah, you're exactly right. It's really that core based upon the GPA based upon those core classes, including those courses that you need to lock in at the end of your junior year. And then once again, that's kind of why it's important to sort of be creating a little worksheet, and those worksheets are available once again. And then I'll say it again, I'm a big fan of the free guide. It's called the Guide for the College Bound Student Athlete, that you can download for free off the Eligibility Center website. Or I think if you just Google the Guide for the College Bound Student Athlete, you will be able to find that free PDF, that publication, and you can download that. There's some nice worksheets in there, and it'll give you a nice timeline of things you should be doing from freshman year all the way to senior year. And, you know, once again, if you're a student athlete out there and you feel like you don't necessarily, you know, you need some extra help or support with that, I think there's some, you know, some good people to reach out to in any high school that will, you know, help you figure out the process.
Ed, Brian, didn't count towards your NCAA clearinghouse.
Could you repeat that question? Sorry, Tom.
I'm sorry. I said all those A's that you got in Phi Ed in high school wouldn't have counted towards your NCAA eligibility.
No, I think back when I was in high school, those counted as English classes.
Oh, my goodness. Before this thing gets off the rails, we're up against a break. Brian, thank you so much for your time this morning. I think the information that you gave is unbelievably important, because as now students start making their way into whether they're starting high school or making their way through those first couple of years of high school, knowing what's ahead of them and how to maneuver that is ever so important in hopes of trying to get to that next level and to play at the college level, whether it's Division I or Division III. So thank you so much for your time, and have yourself a very safe and enjoyable 4th of July weekend.
Thank you for having me. Have a good weekend as well.
All right.
Thanks, Brian.
That's Brian Hoffman, Director of Guidance at Wauwatosa West High School. As we get to a break on the other side, we're going to talk to Ron Ernst, the head football coach at Ripon College. He'll be joining us next, along with Tom Swiddle. I'm Don Wachilis. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Pella Doors and Windows, right here on 1250 AM, The Fan. Once again, happy 4th of July weekend to everyone. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Pella Doors and Windows. I'm Don Wachilis, filling in for big-time Mike McGivern, also joined, as always, by the Hall of Fame coach Tom Swiddle. And with that, we jump to the Great Midwest Bank hotline and bring in the head coach at Ripon College. It's head coach Ron Ertz. Coach, how are you this morning?
Good morning, guys. Doing very, very well. Really glad to be with you guys on this weekend.
Great to have you on board as well. And, Coach, I guess this is probably the most over-asked question in the last few months. But going into now this upcoming season, coming out of what we just came out of, does it just feel better to have some degree of normalcy going into this academic year, at least the way things stand right now?
It really does. It feels great. The summer is always a very, very busy time for us during our normal season, but last year was just very, very difficult. But this summer it feels normal again. And the excitement level that I know myself, my staff, and the kids are feeling right now is just, we just cannot wait to get started. And this is really going to be a lot of fun, and we're certainly very, very, very much looking forward to it.
Coach, we've kind of caught you at a weird time because we are probably about a month away from the start of your season, but we're only a couple months removed from a spring season. What was that like for you, playing a spring season of football?
Weird. Very weird. It really weird. It was, because I'm going to tell you what, putting pads on, you know, at Division III, we were not able to wear pads in the spring, but we had an abbreviated season. We had they let us do a couple things because of the whole COVID thing, but it was really weird to have practice planning and things like that. We had a lot of kids that missed practice because they were in classes that we could not work around, and it was just a really different situation. It really was, you know. And so when the season ended, it was like, okay, it's over. But now we're starting to look forward to the fall, and things are starting to get back to normal. But it was really odd. It was just an odd feeling. It's just not something that we were used to doing. I've been playing football since I was, you know, 8 years old, and every year since then, the football season was in the fall. It was never in the spring, and so it was just very different.
Coach, even though you had that abbreviated season, and as mm-hmm. different as it was, now that we're using the term normal, heading back to fall football, what has that done as far as your preparation goes, knowing you've got this group of young men who have just got done with a season and now right. really have to amp things up again to get ready for the next in a relatively short period of time, shorter than what you're used to?
Well, we have a small handful of kids that, you know, suffered a few injuries in the spring. And in a normal setting, they would have 6-7 months to recover. And our kids don't have that opportunity right now. We have a number of kids that from a physical standpoint needed that time. And we don't have that. So that's on the one hand, that's a little concerning that the recovery time is not as good as we would like it to have been. But at the same time, on the positive side, we are installing a brand new offense. We're putting in a bunch of new things into our system, both offensively and defensively. And the spring really afforded us the opportunity to get the bugs worked out, shall we say, because had we not had that spring, we would have had to gone through those growing pains, shall we say, in the fall. When it really counts. I mean, we played in the spring. None of those games counted. They really weren't meaningful towards anything, but it gave us a chance to really experiment with some things, put some new things in, find out what we liked, find out what we didn't like, make the adjustments over the summer, and then hit the ground running come August.
And you had, not only did you have the spring, Coach, but you did do things last fall, correct? I mean,
that
you did
correct.
Have practices. You did were able to have contact and things. So, you know, some of the college coaches that I've talked to, they were kind of happy in a way with the amount of time they were able to spend with their athletes. I mean, everybody wants to play games, but at the same time, They had the opportunity to work with them on a number of things that normally you might not have had time to work with them on.
Well, there's no doubt about that. We did practice in the fall. Now, our conference did not allow us to have any pads at all, or at least we didn't. And so we were just T-shirts and shorts the entire fall. We were not even issued helmets. But having had that time, it was very, very productive in the sense that we were able to do a lot of things. We were able to introduce a lot of things, terminology, schemes. You know, obviously football is a contact sport. You got to be able to hit people. But at the same time, there's a lot of learning that needs to take place. And we have a very, very good freshman class. We had a good freshman class coming in. It gave us an opportunity to introduce the offense, the defense, the schemes. And so those kids will actually really benefit from that come this fall. And so even though that we weren't able to play football and have games and things like that, it was a very productive thing. I want to give credit to our institution because in the Midwest Conference, we were only one of about three schools that were able to do things in the fall and the spring. Some campuses just shut down altogether. And so we, from Ripon's perspective, it was a very good time to learn from that perspective for our kids.
We're talking with Ron Ernst, the head football coach at Ripon College. And, Coach, you went through just how productive that was in the fall and being able to do what you did in the spring session, we'll call it that. But how bittersweet was it for you because of the seniors? I mean, that had to be a tough road knowing that these seniors were really in the midst of their last year playing football and then having to deal with what everybody else was dealing with as well.
You know, that was probably the hardest thing to deal with, was to be able to see our seniors who had put in three really good years, hard work, and to get to that point and not be able to have the kind of year that they deserved was very, very frustrating. It really was. But at the same time, you know, you look back even a little further back, every sport suffered. Every sport suffered. You know, track, baseball. Our baseball team last spring was literally loading the bus to get ready to go to Florida for their spring trip when they called everything off and called the season off. So, I mean, you're literally moments away from getting it started. And I just really felt bad for all the seniors of all sports, the women and the men, through all of last year, not being able to have that season. You know, I will credit the NCAA. They did give those kids that year back if they so choose to do it. Now, right now, we don't have any seniors that are going to take that extra year and come back. They're all going to graduate, move on into grad school or get jobs, which I can certainly respect. But, you know, I know some kids are. But I guess that's the great thing about athletics sometimes. It teaches you that sometimes life isn't always fair and you got to deal with what's in front of you. And it's not so much, you know, what happens, it's how you deal with it. And these kids have gone through a really rough period and a rough thing, but I think it'll make them stronger people in the long run.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Coach. Don, I'm sorry to keep asking, are we getting close to a break here? I don't want to...
I'll tell you what, Tom. Why don't you ask one more, and then after that we'll step aside and take a quick break.
Well, one of the things that I'd like to do, Don, is we haven't given Coach Ernst his due here. I mean, we're talking to somebody who's going to be in his 31st year at Ripon this fall, 31st year of coaching. Coach, wow, is all I can say to that. And, you know, we are also talking to a man who is the winningest coach, not only at Ripon College, but in Midwest Conference history. Coach is a Hall of Fame member for both the WFCA and Ripon College, and you know you're the dean of coaches, obviously in the Midwest Conference. How does that feel to be the guy that's been around longer than anybody else and can actually give history lessons to the other coaches in the league.
Well, I tell you what, it has its moments. It's nice to be able to work with so many great coaches in our conference. We have some great guys, we really do. And I'll be honest with you, Tom. I hear that phrase 30 years or 31 years or whatnot, and it just doesn't feel that way. It really doesn't.
Well, I mean, good for you.
It feels like I can just keep going. I mean, I'm as excited to get this season started as I was back in 1991 with our very first season. This is such a great sport and a great profession, and it's just a great situation that I'm in here at Ripon College. It really is, and it's fun to see the new coaches come in. I'm sad to see some of the coaches leave for various different reasons, because they're all good men. But it's fun. It's enjoyable, and it keeps me young and keeps me going. Except when I have to get up in the morning and mow the yard like I did this morning, and then I start to feel like I've been here a few years and stuff like that. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been a great run. I'm going to keep going until I feel like I can't contribute anymore to our kids and our program. And it's just been a really good situation and a fun ride. It really has.
All right, we're pushed up against the break, but on the other side of the break, we'll keep our conversation going here with head coach Ron Ertz from Ripon College, and we'll do so right after this. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Pella Doors and Windows, right here on 1250 AM, The Fan. American woman, stay away from me. American woman, mama, let me be. Welcome back. It's the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Joined, as always, by the Hall of Fame coach, Tom Swiddle. I'm Don Wachilla, sitting in for big-time Mike McGivern. And on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, we continue to be joined by Ron Ernst, the head football coach at Ripon College. Coach, to start things off this segment, I want to go back to what we were talking about last segment, and that was the fact that you do not have any seniors who are going to return, even given that extra year of eligibility. And as you said in your response, I mean, it's a bit of a different situation when you've got people, in essence, paying for school as opposed to scholarship athletes, and they're getting ready to move on to their chosen profession or whether or not it's grad school. Could you share in generalities, though, what those conversations were like when the guys knocked on the door and said, coach, I think I'm ready to move on?
It was hard. It really was hard for the kids. I'll be honest with you. There were some tears involved because the seniors that we had last year were just really, really high-quality young men, and they were passionate about Ripon College football. They wanted to stay. Their heart, they loved the game of football. They were not ready to give up football. They just weren't. But like I said earlier, and as you mentioned, these were kids that are paying for school. Their families are helping them pay. And they did not come to Ripon College to have the next step of their life be the NFL. We worked really hard with these young men. They did a great job in the classroom. These are kids that are going to get jobs. They're going to go on into grad school and go on and do great, great things. And Ripon College has really prepared them for that. And when you go into college, you think, okay, I'm going to play football for 4 years. I've set up all my classes to be done in 4 years. That's what we do here is we get our kids done in four. That they were at that point. They were at the point where they were going to graduate, and it's time for them to move on. And they just didn't see their final year being. It wasn't going to look like that. They didn't think it was going to be. They weren't going to be able to play football. The education part of things went very, very well for them. These are very highly intelligent, disciplined young men, and but they wanted to play football, and that's a big part of who they are as football players, as Division III athletes. And so there were some tears involved. There was, you know, I asked them, please give me a decision with what you think by a certain date. And I'll tell you what, literally everyone waited till the last day at the last minute, at the last moment, because they were really thinking hard about what they wanted to do or what they had to do. And I told them I loved them. I respected their decision. I'm going to do everything I can to help them get to where they need to be or want to be in life. That's what we're here to do. And but it was just hard. But there were some tears and some real apprehension on their part as making that decision. But it's one of those life decisions you got to make. It's a hard one, part of growing up. And I think they made the right decision for them.
Well, and I, Coach, I'm sure with your guidance and the fact that they were able to talk to you the way they did, it was because of the relationship you have with them. You know, thank you for giving them the courage to make that kind of decision. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your program. You know, I've gone on the website. I know some of your assistant coaches, and you have a nice blend of veteran guys, guys that have been with you for a while, and younger guys. Talk a little bit about your coaching staff.
Well, I'm gonna make a statement here. I think every head coach feels this way, but doggone it, I think I've got the best staff in the country. I really do. These are really good men. You're right. I've got some guys that have been with me over 15, 20 years. Dan Luke, Rick Coles, Mike Schmidt. Guys like this that have been with me 15, 20, 22, 23 years. And I got a nice mix of young coaches, guys that I recruited out of high school that played for me here. Jake Marshall, John Petkoff, and some guys in from the local area that were great high school coaches. You know, Mark Madigan, you know, guys like that are just really, really talented guys. Mike Yoder, all these guys are passionate about coaching football. They love what they're doing. We all work very, very well together, and that's what makes it fun. Is that these guys are really bought into our program, into what we're trying to teach our young guys and how we prepare them. And I couldn't be luckier. I really could. I just could not be luckier to have these guys. And beyond being just good men, these are really good coaches, man. The amount of experience that these guys bring to the table is unbelievable. So I'm very fortunate. You know, I've oftentimes said this in jest, and but yet a little serious. I oftentimes consider myself the smartest guy in the room because I hire people a heck of a lot smarter than I am. So that you know, I feel very fortunate that I've got these guys on staff. There's no doubt about it.
Coach, we're headed towards. I'm sorry, Coach, but we're headed towards the top of the hour. We got to take a break.
Okay.
We were lucky to have you on today. Thank you so much for your time. Have yourself a safe and enjoyable 4th of July weekend, and good luck with the upcoming season.
Guys, thanks for having me. I sure appreciate it. You guys have a safe and wonderful 4th of July also.
Thank you, Coach.
That's Ron Ertz, the head football coach at Ripon College, joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. As we said, we're at the top of the hour. We'll take a break, and on the other side of the break, we're going to talk with Jerry Gombieski, the WFCA fundraising chairman, and talk about that relationship with the upcoming All-Star game. We'll get to it all next. It's the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, right here on 1250 AM, The Fan.
Why is there a harbor seal walking around the office?
Oh, that's our new CEO.
Come again?
Well, apparently they didn't order through Easy Cater for the board meeting, and when the food didn't arrive, they kind of lost focus. Next thing you know?
We have a seal as our CEO.
Did I say something wrong?
No, she just wants a mackerel. Here you go.
Bad ideas happen when there's no food for the meeting, so make sure it's on time and as ordered from more than 80,000 restaurants. Now, Easy Cater.
Thank you. I just got promoted.
Order 24/7 on easycater.com.